How are you feeling?
It's been a struggle. I mean, I nearly made it the whole season, and it was the very, very final week that got me in the end. So, yeah, a bit of a struggle, but it's done now because I was on the Turin team, as I said last week. So Davis Cup is over for me, even though it's still going. Semi-finals day to day, I believe.
It feels like it's been going a long time. The problem is, especially in our profession, when the voice goes and you can protect it. But once it's gone, there is nothing you can do. It's gone.
Yeah, it totally went on the Saturday, which was our long day because we had six matches to do. So my poor rest of the team. I mean, I tried. I did five games and it was just so awful to listeners everywhere that were tweeting in saying, I don't know about this. So I had to stop and I had to leave it up to them, which was, I know it was a shame, but I still watched the tennis. I just couldn't speak, which is an issue with my job.
I was trying to think of all these remedies for you because I've suffered with it over the years. And I was telling you, find some honey, any honey, take it, get some chamomile, gargle with salt. You're like, I'm trying. At one point, how much honey had you stashed from the hotel?
Oh, yeah, you know, you get those little jars in the morning. I basically had a backpack full of honey. And I texted you being like, is it possible to have too much honey?
No.
And I'm not sure I was quite doing it right because access to hot water when you're up at the top of a commentary box was not not easy. You have to keep running up and down. It was a lot of steps to get up because, you know, we're at the very, very, very top of the stadium. So I was just eating honey, thinking this will help. Just eating honey out of the jars. Pouring it in my mouth and thinking that might help. But no, it was very frustrating. I mean, it was fab to be in Turin working on Davis Cup for sure. I was very, very frustrated. I mean, you know how it is. It's so frustrating that you can't work, especially being on site at the tournament. You know, we haven't had a lot of that recently. And I must say I did throw a bit of a strop and a bit of a sulk on the Saturday. And then the poor guys who were having to pick up the slack because I couldn't do anything. We had the longest day you could ever imagine. I mean, play started at 10 a.m. and finished at 3 a.m. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
So, so then it was just a few hours. Then we were back in action the next day. And then we had another long day. It was all going on in Turin. We were absolutely having the lengthiest match because you never know with tennis. We had six matches and five of them were three set matches. I think four of them were six in the third, so it was pretty epic, to be honest. So yeah, I mean, look, it was so much fun and really enjoyable. It was just a shame that for part of it was a bit of a struggle for me.
Well, I'm glad you got your voice back because tennis, look, my Instagram might be filled with players in the Maldives on beaches having well-earned rests, but it doesn't mean...
Why don't they just do exhibitions in the Maldives? Would that not... they're all there. Well, just pop an exhibition on.
Wasn't there one year when... Isn't it Marin Cilic bumped into Novak Djokovic on an island in the Maldives? And... Wasn't it something like that?
And they just hit.
And yeah,
they
had a hit. Didn't Marin Cilic have a spare racket and they just had a hit? And you think, I imagine that would be the last thing that you would want to do in your very, very tiny off-season break.
Well, this is the only way these people communicate with each other, through hitting balls at each other. So they're the only thing they know how to do.
Actually, that's true. So, but you'd think that tennis would go slightly quieter because, as I say, all the Maldives photos are coming in. But this week, tennis in the UK was on the front pages for two reasons. Now, one,
yes,
largely UK focused because it was the former British number one Johanna Konta deciding that the time had come and she was stepping away, retiring from tennis, which we'll get to. The other one, the more global story, is the suspension of all events in China and Hong Kong by the WTA over the ongoing Peng Shuai situation. A brave, bold, but you feel right decision by Steve Simon and the WTA.
Yeah, let's focus on that one for now. It's sort of difficult to flip-flop between that and Konta's career, to be honest. But it's incredible. I just think it is so impressive. I really felt like, you know, I was saying in the last pod, once they had made their demands, it was just, well, that's just never going to happen. So they're going to have to pull out. It was just they have to. I mean, look, they've pulled out for this year. So that's going to cost them tens of millions of dollars. And let's make no mistake about it, cost the players that much money as well, because it's, you know, a lot of that is prize money that the players will not be able to get. We had a fantastic tournament in Guadalajara for the WTA Tour Finals in place of Shenzhen. Nothing to do with Peng Shuai, but just because we couldn't go to Shenzhen. The prize pool was absolutely nothing in comparison to the $4.6 million the winner would have won in Shenzhen. Muguruza did not pick that up. So it's going to hurt the players and it's going to hurt the tour. But I think they had no choice, really. But it's still pretty amazing, you know. I mean, how many other Western companies have stood up to China? And for what they're doing, maybe it's different because this is sort of like a company who has an employee who is being treated in a situation that they're not happy with. But is it the first time this has happened? I don't know. It's yeah, it's extraordinary.
It's huge, and it made global news. And I think when we were talking the pod last week, there was an air about us when we were discussing the situation in that China will do what China will do, and does China really care about what everyone else is thinking about the situation? Probably not. What this does do, it keeps it very much out there, this story. It means it's still very much a story that everybody yeah. is talking about. It's big, brave and bold by the WTA because the deal with China, I think already one of the sponsors has asked to be removed from the WTA website. And as you said, Shenzhen, that deal only recently signed and the prize pot there for the players. But what this does, it keeps the story out there because there was a worry because we had seen the videos that they had released of Peng Shuai at some tournaments and the IOC, the first conversation, the still of her on the video call, that a number of people were satisfied that she was well, she was alive, and that China would do what China would do. I think what this has done is stepped it up again. So the IOC have said they've had another call with Peng Shuai. Now, this time we don't get a still. We don't get anything other than we have spoken to her and we're going to try and meet with her in person next month. Which
Why are the IOC doing it? She doesn't know the IOC. The IOC is not the WTA. They're entirely different. I mean, it's just... It doesn't... None of it makes... And just let the WTA speak to her and then we can move forward. Like, that's just it. I mean, I can't see... As I said last week, for me, there is absolutely no resolution to this. There's no way. I do think that China care what people think because they are releasing these pictures and they are trying to get everybody to calm down about it. They're just not doing a good enough job because doing what's being asked of them.
Do they care what people think or are they just trying to... get people just to stop talking about it? Do they want it to go away?
I think
is care the right word? Because do they care? Or are they just trying to say, look, she's fine, everybody, go about your business?
No, I think they care what people think. Are they going to change the way that they govern and their policies because of what the WTA want? Absolutely not. And that means that the WTA are not going to get what they want out of this Peng Shuai situation. You know, whether any sort of compromise can be made, possibly for future years. For this year, it's clear it's not happening because they're just like, we haven't heard anything. You know, just we haven't heard a thing. Apart from stuff that they, you know, are saying is nonsense. So, yeah, I don't know. The only chance, really, of there being tournaments in the future with China is if some compromise can be made because there is no way the WTA are going to have their demands met. Absolutely no way. But very impressive from Steve Simon. Interesting that ATP and ITF have not really gone with him with their statements. They are not against them, but they just don't want to take, I think, such drastic action so early. I think they sort of want to see where this is going. So they're very supportive of the WTA. So, you know, I would say that. But it's definitely a much more muted response from ITF and ATP.
Yeah, a friend of ours, Reem, who's working on the Davis Cup, asked Daniil Medvedev about the situation and about ATP not withdrawing from China as of now. And his answer was, look, if we had to play in China next week, some of us would feel uncomfortable about the situation. They're obviously waiting to see how it develops, if it develops. I think the IOC, the ridiculous thing about the IOC is with the Winter Olympics happening in Beijing at the start of next year, it just feels so cynical, everything they're doing. As you said, yes, they will say that Peng Shuai is an Olympian, so therefore we have a right to have a say in this, as the WTA will say, look, she's one of ours. So the IOC will say, look, as a former Olympian, we can get involved in this. But, you know, everyone is just shaking their head at these statements coming out from the IOC because they have so much invested in the Winter Olympics taking place in Beijing next month.
It's honestly, it's like they're not even trying. Like that's the thing. They're not even trying to make it seem like sort of plausible in any way. It's absolute madness. And yeah, as I say, I think this is going to rumble on, and it will end up, it will end up with a compromise from the WTA, and then there will be tournaments beyond that, and then ATP and ITF will continue with their events in the country, or it will end with the WTA pulling out permanently. And then there'll be a lot of pressure on the ITF and ATP to see what they would then do, whether they would follow with them or not, because that would be quite extraordinary. We've talked a lot about ATP and WTA coming together recently, a little bit more, getting on side. You know, this is one of the WTA players is, in this situation. Will the ATP and ITF go along with whatever the WTA response is? At the moment, they seem to be sort of just going cautiously, whereas the WTA has clearly made the decision that if this costs us tens of millions, hundreds of millions, that's what it's going to do, because the safety of our players is, of course, the biggest thing. This is the biggest sport in the world for women in a number of ways. And she was at the very top of it.
A couple of quotes from CEO of the WTA, Steve Simon, one which I thought really stood out. I hope she knows that none of this is her fault, because on the flip side of this, with the WTA suspending the tournaments in China, what effect will that have on Chinese players? Will they be allowed to come out and play other tournaments? Will they be held back? So, there's for Peng Shuai, who's already dealing with a lot with the allegations that she's made, we don't know exactly the situation for her, believe her to be in Beijing. But now she might get a certain person or group of people saying, well, now you're jeopardising the future of X, Y and Z, because China might say, right, our players aren't going to come out and play at your tournament. So I think it was really important, the WTA doing the right thing, but Steve Simon to say that I hope she knows that none of this is her fault.
Yeah, and you can understand, that you would sort of blame yourself, because you'd just be sitting there thinking, oh, if I hadn't said anything, nothing would be happening, if I just gone about my business. But that is such a typical thing of, that's why people keep quiet about so much of the difficulties that they deal with, whether it's abuse or even if it's mental health issues, whatever it is, it's because of what that will cause and the disruption that causes to everybody else, the worry, the emotions. You might want to be leaving an abusive relationship, and that ruins everything for the family, and logistically, where are you going to live? All of these things just seem so overwhelming, and that's why people keep quiet. And, actually it is the brave thing to take it on and then, and deal with the consequences. So I'm really glad. I've been so impressed with the way that Steve Simon has spoken about this, like so impressed. I'm sure he's being advised by, a team of experts on it as well. But I think that he really has sort of ticked every box, just repeating that, that the WTA are ready to offer as much support to her as needed, that it's not her fault, that they're totally behind her, that we're more than happy to pull out of China, like whatever it is, because it's just unacceptable. It'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. I think it's a tough one to call. I think it's between them coming to a compromise and then WTA pulling out, but I think probably they'll just end up going.
Well, one thing it does, it shows fantastic leadership from Steve Simon. And he said, one thing we can't do is walk away from this, because you imagine the courage of what it took for Peng Shuai to come out with the allegations of abuse that she suffered. I mean, imagine the courage that took. And as we talked about last week, she didn't sort of fly out the country and do it from afar and then stay safe somewhere else. She released her statement on social media in Beijing, in China, probably knowing that there would be an intense fallout to this. So she has been as brave as she has been. And she obviously got to the point where she needed to say something. She needed to vocalise it. She needed to put it out there. And now the WTA are almost rewarding that bravery, saying, you have been that brave to do that. We are going to stand with you. And I think that's fantastic. And it keeps us talking about it. Because after we did see that still and the videos of her at a couple of junior tournaments, I noticed on social media, a lot of people who had the picture of hashtag, where is Peng Shuai, they put it back to the normal one, which is absolutely fair enough. And a lot of people were satisfied. Well, she's alive, and that was the big thing. So that's fine. And other things happen in the world, and things do move on to an extent. Maybe China was hoping that would happen, that we'd move on to something else, and it would still be there, but it wouldn't be such a big thing. What this from the WTA has done has kept it front and center. Steve Simon has been speaking to news outlets across the world in the last 2 or 3 days. We've had the statements from the ITF and ATP. There's, you know, it's back in the forefront, which is where it needs to be. And with the Beijing Olympics, as that gets close to the Winter Olympics, it's going to be really interesting to see how this does play out. I, like you, I'm sort of doubtful it's going to be the result that maybe we're all looking for. But it can only be a good thing, the stance that the WTA has taken. And, you know, we just hope that Peng Shuai continues to be safe and that she's not being held against her will, and there is some resolution to this.
What about the players? What have we heard from players? Because I've seen a few on social media, and look, I'm not going to say that social media is everything, because it's not, but it's only, you know, that and sort of press conferences, as, you know, you said Medvedev was asked about it. You know, we've had a few people who've either been asked about it at Davis Cup because they're playing, or we've had a few people on social media, but it hasn't been overwhelming support for the WTA that we've, as I say, that we've seen on social media. People might be very happy with it and supportive in the background. You don't have to post everything on social media. I don't post anything. It doesn't mean that I'm not supporting it, right? So, but it did just strike me as, of course, everybody very much got behind the where is Peng Shuai situation. And then since this WTA announcement, there have been a few players that have said, yep, great, absolutely, a couple of men's players as well, and then a few then it just, I don't know, does it feel a bit light to you?
Maybe they just feel that they don't need to say anything in this instance. When you're looking for someone who is feared missing, maybe you have to be, where is she, you change the hashtag, you build up the traffic, you want to find out where she's. Maybe to something like this, they just didn't. I mean, I saw like Petra Kvitova with the hand clap saying, well done. A number of former players have come out. As you mentioned, Djokovic was asked about it, Medvedev was asked about it, etc. Maybe they just feel that they don't need to all come out and say, because I can't imagine there's any one of them out there thinking this isn't the right thing to do.
Well, it could be. They're going to lose millions of dollars.
Wow. Well,
but realistically, that is one of the reasons. That's why it's so impressive what the WTA have done, is because they will lose so much money. But, you know, let's not beat around the bush. They will be under pressure now to go and find that money somewhere else. And it's very unlikely you can get the sort of investment you get from China from other places, yep, unless you then go to the Middle East and whatever else. But, you know, I'm not saying that anybody is annoyed about it. I'm just saying that absolutely could be an option, because
I'd love to have a conversation with that player, if that player exists, that is slightly annoyed that they could lose out on millions, because it doesn't make sense, because there is so much money in tennis. There are so many tournaments, and yes, it does make up a big chunk. And as an association, the WTA could be in a very perilous situation without the money from China and Hong Kong. But in terms of individual players, you know, the amount, the living they can make from just the Grand Slams alone that do not touch Asia. And yes, there's that huge pot in Shenzhen, but it's only a handful of players. The players that qualify for Shenzhen in that pot make millions throughout the year. So when they get to Shenzhen, it's a wonderful end to the year to make that money. But it doesn't really make a difference. You know, those players, sure, who it would make a massive difference to, they wouldn't get anywhere near it. So I think, yeah, the WTA, I wouldn't be surprised if there's people within the WTA at senior level who are biting fingernails and rocking in their seats, because they wonder, will they get through this? How will they get through this? Where will they get the funding and the money they lose in China from? But in terms of players, I wouldn't see that as a reason for silence, because they can make a very good living. And as I say, those who are making them, the worry would be for those players within China who may now feel that they won't be allowed to travel and have their career. I guess if there's...
Yeah, are they going to be allowed to play? Exactly. Because that would be the obvious retaliation, yes, right, from the Chinese government, is to say, right, no one's playing. And let's make no mistake, it was not that long ago that there were plenty of Chinese players playing, including Li Na, and the Chinese government was taking their earnings. They were effectively on a sort of a base salary, and anything they earned went back to the Chinese government. That's sort of how they have operated with athletes for a long time, and it took quite a while before they were allowed to even keep their earnings. So I think they would have absolutely no issue in saying, right, no more players then, because that's how they view it, is that they're theirs. They really do own them. And as I say, what they say goes. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if there is any retaliation, or if they just sort of go, okay, fine, we'll leave it there.
I think so for me, if we're just talking purely players, if they're only players that were sort of against or not sure if the WTA were doing the right thing, they would be the only players I could think of, because they could be the players who would be affected, which is why I think Steve Simon made that comment saying she has to remember none of this is her fault. It's look, I hope we keep talking about it. I hope there's a resolution.
I would just say as well that I don't think that any players are annoyed about the money. I really don't think that. But I do. I just think that, as I say, people don't have to put their opinions on social media, but we have a group of players that do that quite regularly, and did, you know, talk about where is Peng Shuai originally. So you just would think they would sort of either back up the WTA, even as the ATP and ITF have backed them up, although it's a fairly cautious response. They have essentially backed them up, so you're not really going out on a limb to say sort of, well done WTA. It just for me has felt a little light on it. But then, as you say, everyone's in the Maldives, maybe they're just having a lovely time. They're like, great, she's safe, back to the beach.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The other story that was, well, dominated, especially in the UK, but it would have reached out in the tennis world on a global scale, because she's a former world number four and she got to the semi-finals of three of the four Grand Slams, is Johanna Konta retiring. And for many, it's come out of the blue. For those close to her, not so much. I remember doing a five live show with her. It wasn't so long ago, was it? And then afterwards, she went and did a few days for Amazon. I remember thinking, is she planning for life after tennis? And it was quite interesting. During the show on Five Live, we were talking about something. And I think Russell, my colleague Russell, was asking her about the future and when she'd come back and any thoughts about retiring. And she was sort of said, oh, you know, I'm no, no, no. And I said, I have to say, Joe, when you look at your Instagram, you wouldn't necessarily know you're a tennis player, because it said, I think it's dogs, baking and family. She said, does it not show tennis? And I said, well, it shows a lot of interest, but tennis isn't the thing that stands out. So it's possibly, and you would assume, because she recently got engaged, didn't she, that she has been planning, and maybe it's a combination of the body, because we know she's been suffering in recent times with injury, and just getting to a place in her life where she sees a future past tennis.
Yeah, I think she's just done with it. I think she just wants to have a family, settle down and do all of that. And now there are some players that are more than happy to have a family and then go on the road with them. We see that with Serena, Victoria Azarenka, some of the guys do as well. You know, you've got... musicians touring out, they'll take their kids on tour, and that's fine. But then a lot of people, you know, I put myself in that camp, and Konta's clearly in that camp, would like to be settled with a family and not live a nomadic lifestyle, in that sort of situation. You just want to have your roots. You've been all over the place for all of your life. I mean, Konta's, you know, grown up in all different countries, and she is settled, and I'm sure she wants that sort of grounding. For me, it's been a long time coming. The first instance was Roland Garros last year. So that's what, just over a year ago, October 2020 or October 2020. And she said, I think she said something in an interview where they were talking about the restrictions and the new tournaments and the bubbles and stuff. And she said, yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, we're not going to go back to normal within the rest of my playing career. And or she said something like, I may never get to play a normal tournament again in the rest of my career. Basically, she was saying that. And at the time, we sort of thought that it was going to be going on for maybe a year. We thought that maybe 2021 would be affected. Now we're sort of thinking, oh God, okay, here we are, still going. But at the time, I don't think anybody anticipated that 2022 would be disrupted with bubbles and limited crowds and that sort of thing. But, you know, here we are. When she said that, I thought, okay, she's absolutely winding down. And she's had the knee issues and then the fact that there haven't been brilliant crowds. It was devastating for her to have missed Wimbledon, of course, she tested positive Olympics. To COVID. I think I said to you with the testing positive for COVID at Wimbledon. Oh, no, she didn't. Sorry, her team member did. Close contact. Yep. I was like, I think that would have been her last Wimbledon. And she's not been able to play. I thought that it's was so going to be her last one. Yeah. So I think she's been winding down for a while. It's the right time. It's the end of the season. Does she want to do an off-season, pre-season training, work on things, get set for... Oh, no, she's done, and I'm thrilled for her. She's had a fantastic career. And she really is an example in maximising. You know, no one in British tennis thought that she could be a top 10 tennis player, let alone four in the world. And, you know, and Miami champion... Absolutely extraordinary. Semi-finals of slams on the edge of the final of the French Open. She hadn't even won a match at the French Open before that year. I have so much admiration for her. You know, I know her, but I don't know her that well. I played against her in the early days. You know, I've been around her training. When I see her, we stop and we talk dogs because she's got dogs. She's got four dogs now. I mean, that is just madness to me. I've got one. So we talk about that. And she's always been really, really lovely.
I know we had dog chat when she came in for the show. And I'm not good with dog chat. I don't have dog, don't really understand dogs. I'd probably choose cats over dogs.
Just repeat everything you've heard me say.
I sort of treat them, because for some people before, or if they don't have children, it's sort of a similar thing, isn't it? They treat them like they're children, right? Some people can treat dogs like children. I have those kind of, you know, oh, they're sweet. What are they called? Sort of questions you'd ask people with babies. It's a similar thing with dogs. Oh, how many do you have? How old they are? How old are they? What are their names?
Yeah.
So you do speak to a lot of people and they say they know her, but not necessarily that well. But everyone admires everything she's done. I mean, the way she worked. I know she talked about the process. And yes, it did get frustrating interviewing her because... You know, you wanted her just to say, when she got to semifinals in Australia, it's incredible, it's amazing, and I've called home, but it's a process, and it's the next match. And when you're interviewing someone and you want that quote, you're like, just give me something. But it was something that really worked for her.
Oh, she compartmentalised things extraordinarily well, because she was sort of stuck between 100 and 200 for some time. And... you know, and she did have quite a lot of anxieties and a lot of tension when she was on the match. And I really loved her. I don't want to call it a speech. What she wrote about finishing her career.
Yeah,
her message. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant because she talked about the fact that the right people came along at the right time, because it is so crucial, and that does. You know, Mina, that is a little bit of luck. And actually, she only found Esteban Carril because she was forced to move her training from the NTC because the centralised program was disbanded. They didn't want a centralised program at the NTC. They wanted everybody to do their own thing. So she had to go and seek out people. She found Esteban. She was out there she went out to Spain to work with him. And then she was just off. It was sort of the push that she needed, but she wouldn't have done it without the push. She would have stayed at the NTC. And it's not to say that things at the NTC were bad. It's just about what works for you and having the right, as she said, the right coaches at the right time. You know, sometimes players have the best coach, the right coach for them, but it's just not the right time. The player is not in the headspace to take on board the information they need. They're just sort of trying to get through things. But she was ready. She's absolutely fantastic. I mean, what a role model. I, you know, and I agree with you that it did get a little bit frustrating because she was kind of repeating the same things in interviews. But, you know, that's not her expertise. Her expertise is playing tennis. And actually, that whole sort of persona that she created, it really sort of helped her keep a lid on her anxieties because she had go-to responses. She had go-to everything. And she was being honest. You know, the thing is, the process is so boring. Like, it is. It is repetitions. It is don't get too negative. It's do it again. It's do it better. It's think about how you can develop. You know, you've taken a loss, right, be bummed about it. But then, you know, an hour later, right, what are we doing? It's all about the next goal, the next thing. It's looking ahead. And it is really boring, but it works. You know, it's like some people will look at Djokovic's game, and this isn't what I think, but people will say, oh, his game is just so... like, everything's just so consistent. There are just no weaknesses. He doesn't do anything that is particularly sort of magical, with the exception of the movement. He doesn't have the finesse of Federer or whatever it is, or the forehand of Kyrgios. And, you know, people will say, like, oh, you know, it's dull. It's not, well, it works. Like, that is what it is. It's about repetitions. It's about consistency, quality. That's the thing, is that she was sort of being honest. That is what they talk about. That's what she was delivering. So, she's been absolutely fantastic. It's time for a new era in British tennis. But she broke a load of records, and she's had a fantastic career. And I'm delighted that she's been able to achieve it.
Do you see her staying in tennis? She'll obviously want to step away. She's got a wedding to plan and things in the near future. But do you see her as someone that, whether it's on the coaching side of things or commentary or working the media side of things, do you see her staying in the game?
Yeah, I think so. I think possibly a light touch staying in the game. I don't think she's going to sort of dive in. Okay. I don't think we're going to see her back out on tour in a couple of years' time coaching or anything like that, as we do with many players. But I think she will stay involved, but I think she'll be very selective with what she does. I think she'll probably do a bit of punditry, because everybody wants to know what she's got to say about things. Hopefully she can give us more than the process, because as much as it is, it is the truth, we are going to need something else. But no, I think she'll be great at that. I think she's going to dip in here and there and take her time with it and then enjoy her life. But she also has her other businesses that she's got outside of tennis. So she's absolutely fine. I do hope that she does stay involved a bit.
And can I just say, in terms of those players, sports people who have the family and travel with them, my only experience of that was when the twins were 6 months old and I went to Australia with them, wanted to work on the Australian Open. My other half came along and I think we both said, never again. No, we're not in Federer's league. We can't have a nanny per child, which would definitely make things easier. But it was, boy, that was tough, because you don't switch off. You can't.
And also, you don't have access to like the creche that they have on site and that sort of thing, because at most tournaments they do have a creche and they'll have you know, some childminders and people. But you know, you can't, that's not for us.
That's strictly for players. That was really, really tough. They've been to Eastbourne since, but they could walk and talk and look after themselves a little bit more. But wow, I think the big thing is you can't switch off. We know this. When you go to work at a tournament and you leave the little one or little ones behind, you can just focus. You're back to being Naomi, the broadcaster, and you work, right? But when you take the little ones with you, as I have done, or you're doing a tournament where you're working from home and travelling back and forth, you can't switch off, because you're Naomi, the broadcaster. You step through the front door and you handed a baby. It's like, and now it's time to be mum, which is, it's wonderful. But it's, and especially as elite athletes, if you're having to really be selfish and focus on yourself, that is tough, and you need lots of nannies. Can I say a quick hello to Grace? Because Hello, Grace. On social media, she called us her number one podcast.
Yay. Oh, that is sweet.
And she says she's listened at least to each episode at least twice, which is something we haven't even done.
No, I'm not sure. I don't think so. I think I said to you the other week, I was like, do you even listen to this?
And I sort of, well, I do.
But not twice.
There are some weeks when it's just, especially in the run-up to Christmas, and we've got the boys' Christmas fair today, and there's after-school clubs and before-school clubs coming out of my ears, and it's all gone a bit mental, that I try to listen to it on my run, but not every week. But Grace, I mean, do we have any mugs left? I'd like to send Grace a mug.
I think we do.
Yeah?
I think we do. I think, don't you need a new mug as well?
I need a new mug. If you can dig up some
I'll
mugs,
I'll save one
then,
for you.
And we'll get one. We'll get one out. We'll get one out to Grace. You talked about British tennis is in good hands with the retirement of Johanna Konta, referring, one would imagine, in part to Emma Raducanu. Now, I was covering
No, I don't think she's involved at all.
I was covering her exhibition against Elena Gabriela Russa at the Royal Albert Hall. And can I just say, it's really tough. And I think your job when you're in the role of an analyst, it's tougher for you to commentate on an exhibition. Because your job as an analyst, and I was working with Claire Curran, is to analyse forehand, backhand, what they... But you don't want that slash need that, really. And, I mean, at one point, they put up end-of-set stats. And I'm like, we don't need those. You know, it's an exhibition. And then and there's people, and with Raducanu... Now, this was something she agreed to before the US Open. So this was something she was always going to do. But obviously, with everything that happened at the US Open, I mean... And what I thought was amazing is, for her practice, we had the stream of the match. She just walked out on her own. No coaches, no team, no people, no agents, no sponsors. Just wandered out onto the court. Met Russa, who she's friends with. They had a hit. Off she went again. But it's it was great to see her back. It was her first match, if we call it match, on UK soil since becoming US Open champion. But again, you know, the thing that stood out to Claire and I, because I say we weren't analysing too much because it's an exhibition and she's recently been on holiday. It looked like she was somewhere in or near the Maldives. But it was how she adapted to the situation. Because a lot of every time she hit the ball, you could hear the lenses of the cameras clicking. Everyone there was there to see her. There were journalists there who wanted to see, did want to see how she was hitting a forehand and backhand and how she was moving. And she's not experienced exhibitions of playing to a crowd and doing this. But again, it's just how she adapted to the situation.
I don't think I can get across, especially to our international listeners, how ridiculous the coverage of Emma Raducanu is at the moment. Okay, firstly, they had Gigi on commentary, so pulling out the big guns here. So Gigi on comms, and you were doing it for the BBC, right?
It was correct? It was being streamed, among others, to the BBC, yeah.
Yes, and as well as it being streamed on the BBC, they were live reporting on it. So I clicked on it because I wanted to, you know, hear a bit of you, of course. And I clicked on it and I was paying attention and there was somebody live reporting saying break of serve. Oh, back to tight game, that back to juice. Oh, the ball kid's out.
Wow.
Ball kid's now playing. Oh, the ball kid's broken her. Whatever it was. They were live reporting. There's never been anything like that. That's on the BBC. They had a dedicated webpage and a person to just write down what was happening in the match. I mean, it's one thing sort of streaming it and viewing it. It is absolutely bonkers. It's bonkers. There's never been anything like that. Not for Andy. I can't imagine anything else would have happened like that in sort of the States or for any other player. This is superstar to a new level. You know, I think there's a very strong argument to say that Andy is probably been the most popular athlete we've ever had in this country. I think, you know, it took him a while to get there. I mean, she's gone in at that level. That's unbelievable. I mean, Andy had about 10 years of being the most hated person, athlete in the maybe not most hated, like he was given a run for his money by a couple of others, but you know what I mean. I mean, it was tough going for him. He had to win people over. He had to lose over and over again in that Australian Open final and keep crying and then lose in the Wimbledon final before he had to have the whole journey. It was like watching the Great British Bake Off. Or you know, like the X Factor. You had to have the backstory.
Wow, there's a comparison.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, to win over the audience, to win over the British public, you've got to go from sort of, you know, oh, all these trials and tribulations and the tears, oh, I'm getting closer, and all of those things, all those memorable moments, and then win Wimbledon, and then the British public were just putty in his hands, and he has been an absolute superstar since. Winning the US Open, people were, yeah, they were like, okay, great, well done, right? You know, come on, let's take it seriously. I mean, he definitely had a bit of a boost, but it, of course, was winning Wimbledon. For Emma, she won the US Open. As I say, she's gone in at the level that Andy Murray's been at for the last 5 years. No trials, no tribulations.
And she's taken to it like a duck to water. Yes, we've said and we'll say again, you've got to give her time because there will be those that found out about her during the US Open that want to see results and want to see her winning every match. And those in the industry and close to her saying, give her time. She's still young. She's just turned 19. But everything she takes on, whether it was the exhibition, whether it was the interview afterwards, how she's handling herself when she's not playing, she's not, and I know she's got people around her and there are people advising her. And these are people, a lot of whom that you know and you say, look, they are good people and they will help her. But just the way, again, the way she, and Elena Gabriela Russo, I've got to say, she was brilliant. I don't know how many exhibitions she's played in, but she knew that Emma Raducanu was very new to this. So she was doing things like, oh, I've been told to hit to your forehand, or how about me winning a point? And this is getting embarrassing. You know, she worked the crowd, she helped, and she drew Emma into what was an unusual situation. But again, once Emma Raducanu had settled, it's like she'd be doing those for years. And I know there were people watching that because they wanted to see the forehand, the backhand. But you know, something interesting that I was speaking about with Claire Curran is, we know the Emma Raducanu, she's got a great game. Of course it's going to develop. She's still so young, but she likes that big one strike tennis, you know, big serve, the follow up off the serve. And we were talking about Torben Belst and what he'll bring to her new coach. And look, he was in charge of one of the best counter punches we have seen on the WTA side of things. So Claire Curran said, you know, it's frightening. He's going to add something that she doesn't have. This is frighteningly good. And clever, the appointment of Torben Belts, when people were saying he's got experience of the tour. But look at the player he's got experience of and what he can add to the Raducanu game. And Claire Curran was saying, you know, she's so clever with coaches. She gets a coach and she soaks up from them what they have and what they can offer to build her game. And you feel like she's doing this with the addition of Belts and what he can bring to her.
Like I said at the time, just a fantastic appointment. And I was relieved because people get it wrong a lot. You know, as much as I was confident that she was going to get it right, it really was just, you know, when we found out about it, it was, yes, I get it. I see it. I think it's going to work. Look, I'm not saying she's going to win multiple slams next year. I've got no idea. But in terms of the continued development of her game, and somebody to be really grounded and steady the ship. You know, he's just so calm, but very positive. It's the right sort of balance. You know, there are some coaches that are very, very intense. And it's just not what she needs, because actually most coaches are like that. It's very hard to not be. It's not what she needs because, you know, she brings that level. She's so demanding of her coaches. She's saying, you know, right, I want to do this. She's in charge. She doesn't need somebody to be really intense. You know, she needs somebody to really keep things nice and level. So, yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely thrilled with her. And just a shout out to the venue, right? Because if anybody's not seen the Royal Albert Hall, it's definitely worth Googling. It's not a sports venue. It's a music venue. It's a hall. There's a giant organ at one end. When I say giant, I mean the whole wall.
Oh, giant!
I mean,
yeah, enormous.
The whole side is taken up by this huge organ. It's for, you know, concerts, for orchestras, for all this sort of thing, and to play tennis in that environment. I mean, I've been there a couple of times to watch this event.
It's great.
It really is. It really is so cool.
It takes less than 24 hours to change it from, let's call it, a music venue to a sporting, international sporting venue. It takes something like 13 and a half hours to lay the floor. It involves something like, I read this, a few thousand screws, all the plywood that's laid down. They have to remove rows of seating. I mean, it's incredible how, and sadly, it's the last year it's going to be held though.
I know.
It's really sad. It's a great event. It was the Masters event, so the seniors on tour, and this year, I mean, and by the way, I saw a side of Nicolas Almagro I never knew existed. We just kept saying, and again, commentating on, it's not so much exhibition, but Nicolas Almagro, I've only ever seen him scowl. He was laughing. He was showing his bottom to the opponents to get them to hit it with balls. I mean, David Ferrer he still couldn't quite shake the intensity of David. They'd be playing a rally. It had gone on for a while. And then he sort of saw that look in his eye and he's like, no, we got to do it. We got to win this.
Yeah, exactly.
But Nicolas Almagro, I mean, he was the life and soul. But no, it was a lot of fun. So I have to ask you, how are you going to be enjoying your off season? Because you're officially in your off season. You're going to the Maldives?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna pop over there for a bit. I'm gonna spend some time with the little man.
Lovely.
Working on the forehand, particularly.
Good.
But,
excellent.
Yeah, you know, that's that sort of thing. I'm just gonna rest. I mean, we're absolutely exhausted at the end of this season. It's been extraordinary, but try and catch up with a few people, rest, do some Christmassy things. It'll be over before you know it. That's just how it goes. And then, yeah, look forward to the Australian swing.
Well, one thing I can say that's been progress in 2021 is that it was my birthday this week. And I think I've mentioned in the past how my eldest, the eldest of the twins, has this thing when he's on my birthday, when he's around parents from school, he yells out my age. I mean, why? He just has this, he just can't help himself. He just screams out the number. I'm like, oh God, I can report back that this year he just yelled it out once. So I think that's progress. It's progress. There was one parent in the vicinity. I think she probably heard. I was like, why? Why do we do this? Why do you have to do every year? And I'm getting older. So progress. So this year, right?
That
so,
is progress. Well, I'll say happy birthday. Progress. I have said happy birthday to you on other
yeah,
days.
Yeah, you have.
Happy
yeah.
birthday.
I just don't yell out my age following that. But right, so you enjoy closed season for today, spending time with little man. I've got the boys' Christmas fair today. So it's okay. And we've got the Christmas tree arriving today. So Christmas officially.
Wow, action packed.
Yeah, Christmas officially kind of starts today. So
exciting.
No, I'm looking forward
I've got a
to
wreath
that.
Up, you'll be pleased to know.
Have you?
I got a wreath.
Are you getting a tree?
No. Got a wreath up and I'll put some lights up too.
Am I going to have to send you another tree?
You're not doing a tree. I'll have to do a tree next year, but not this. We're going to enjoy our last year without having to do a tree. And then when he's two, we'll have one.
How many people say I'm going to enjoy my last year without a tree? That is just not a sentence I've ever heard before. I'm going to enjoy my last year without a tree. Right, on that note, I can't have this. My tree's coming today.
Okay, sorry.
Have a lovely week. I'm going to feel festive. I'm going to put on some Christmas music. Enjoy the weekend. And I'm sure there'll be an awful lot to talk about in a week's time.
Enjoy your tree decorating.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.